From Trent onward, one can speak, I think, of a counter-reformation. Now, the greatest gains came particularly in southern Germany and in Poland, where, especially through the work of the Jesuits played an important role here as teachers and as preachers, many and large areas were won back from Protestantism. But on the whole, one mustn't say that counter-reformation captures the sense of the whole Catholic experience in the era of the Reformation. Now, let's survey briefly the religious situation at the end of the 16th century. Historians speak of confessionalization, the breaking down of Europe into a number of different religious confessions. The century had opened with a dominant Catholic Church that was almost everywhere under sharp criticism. Through the century, a variety of new religious positions emerged. By the end of the century, the religious situation had hardened sufficiently that the future could now be seen pretty clearly. Well, Roman Catholicism in the first place, then, took definitive shape with the Council of Trent. And that shape is basically what would hold until the middle of the 20th century. And it was fundamentally an affirmation of what Catholicism had been from the patristic period. Lutheranism in the form of the Augsburg Confession of 1540, a basic articulation of the central doctrines of Lutheranism, became dominant in many parts of Germany. Indeed, then, the Peace of Augsburg in 1555 set down the notion, cuius regio, eius religio, whose rule, his religion. The princes of Germany were given the right, given the power, under the Holy Roman Emperor, to declare whether their lands would be Protestant or Catholic. Persons in those lands, if, for example, a territory were declared to be Protestant, Lutheran in other words, Catholics could leave. They were free to leave. They would not be harassed, but they could not stay there and practice their faith. And the reverse was true in Catholic areas. Now, the solution ignored the Reformed tradition, and it ignored what we'll call in just a second the radical tradition. But it does represent, the Peace of Augsburg did, the first official toleration of religious diversity among Christians in Europe since Roman times. Lutheranism, and we mentioned this the other day, so I'll just repeat briefly, spread to Scandinavia and was theologically influential elsewhere, particularly in England, for example, and then eventually spread to the United States. Now, the Reformed tradition arose around Calvin's Institutes. Calvinism became the major form of Protestantism in the parts of Switzerland that did not remain Catholic. Calvinism also dominated Christian experience in the northern Netherlands, what we would think of as Holland as opposed to the southern Netherlands that we would think of as Belgium. That area remained Catholic. The French Protestants, or Huguenots as they were called, were basically Calvinist in their orientation, as indeed were those in Scotland. So the Reformed tradition spread widely. The Reformation in England was in the first place a royal project. It was occasioned by Henry VIII's need for a divorce in order to secure an heir. Now that oversimplifies a little, but only a little. Initially, Henry wanted in England essentially a Catholic church without the Pope. Now after his death, Henry died in 1547, more committed Protestants in England began moving the English church more and more away from Roman Catholic positions. Now, very briefly, Queen Mary, Bloody Mary as she sometimes called, 1553 to 58, tried but failed to re-Catholicize England. When Elizabeth came to the throne, she reigned from 1558 until 1603. When Elizabeth came to the throne, she was sure she didn't want Roman Catholicism. If she had chosen to be Catholic, she would be illegitimate. If she were illegitimate, she couldn't be queen. So in a certain sense, the choice was clear. But she faced Protestants of both Lutheran and Calvinist traditions. And what she wanted was a kind of a balancing act between them. And she got this in 1569 with the Book of Common Prayer, a compromise that we speak of as Anglican, a particular English form of Protestantism in worship and in theology. Finally, there were the radicals. Now, this is not a term of abuse. They sometimes used it of themselves. It refers to people who got right to the root of things. Root in Latin is radix. A radical is somebody who gets right to the root of things. Now, the dominant stream in the radical Reformation came to be called Anabaptists, or rebaptizers. These were basically people who felt that all the other reformers were still tainted with papism. that they had not gone far enough, that they retained too much of the old ways. This was true, they felt, of the Lutherans. It was true, they felt, of the Calvinists. Among their distinctive teachings were a rejection of infant baptism. They believed in believer baptism. Persons should be baptized only when they themselves could make a profession of their own faith. They believed in a congregational concept of church polity. No great hierarchy, pope, archbishops, bishops, and so on. The Lutherans retained bishops. The Calvinists, of course, had their consistories and their town councils. Here, every church community was, in a sense, a law unto itself. They believed in a complete separation of the world as far as possible. We see this still today in Mennonite communities, Amish communities, and so on, who are the direct heirs of the radical Reformation or Anabaptist. Not surprisingly, the Anabaptists had tended in the 16th century to collect on the frontiers in remote rural districts, in places where they were not so likely to be harried by their opponents. When they came, for example, to the New World, again, they tended to go to the frontier where they could practice their particular form of religion without harassment by others. What we see then at the end of the 16th century is five broad patterns of Christian experience, five broad confessions, if you like, each of which would go right on evolving right down to our own days. There is, in conclusion, a wonderful irony to the religious history of the 16th century. For 1,000 years, Europe had been seeking, more in theory than in practice, a Christendom, a Christian civilization. But somehow that had always meant Roman Catholic Christian. At the end of the 16th century, Europe was still Christendom, a Christian civilization, but now there were a variety of forms of Christian experience.